Hi, I'm David, and welcome to the Datasaurus Rex podcast, where we interview data visualization experts and get to know them and their data viz's that little bit better. By the end, you should learn some new skills and get inspired to enhance your own data viz game. And today's guest is a very special one. It's Andy Kriebel, who you probably know him as he's a legend in the data viz community. And I guess the top three things I know him for are the Tableau Zen Master Hall of Famer. There's only four of those in the world. He's also the head coach at the data school, the Information Lab, and he's probably very famous to a lot of you for the creator of Makeover Monday, which is an awesome data visualization community project, which has been running for many years and helped many people up their data viz game. But I won't steal all his thunder. So Andy, welcome. Is there anything else I've missed? Would you like to?
That was a great introduction. Thank you. I think you forgot about Workout Wednesday. That's in its third year now. So Emma White and I did that the first year. And previous to that, we called it the Data School Gym because internally, we would post challenges to each other. And I was like, well, why don't we share that with the community and see what happens? So Emma White, who also works with me at the Information Lab, I asked her to partner with me on that in the first year, but some other people run it now. So,
oh, cool. Nice one. No, so yeah, you do so much. It's it's easy to forget stuff. I guess there's so much. You've also written a book, right, or a couple of books.
So Eva Marie and I wrote a book about it's called Makeover Monday, but it's not really about. Don't think about it as kind of a before and after of the visualizations. It's more what are the lessons that we learned that we can share with the community based on a year into the project. So we used to write blog posts every week that had kind of a lot of details about, you know, what are we seeing? What are people doing well? What could be improved? And we basically turned that into a book.
Wow, that's amazing. I've got my signed copy with me, and I love it. It's very, very insightful. So thank you for that. Okay, so for the listeners today, anything we talk about, I'm going to put in the show notes or video description below so you can follow along. And also, this is going to be a little bit different. So because Andy's such an established pillar of the data viz community, we thought we'd spice things up and make this an Ask Me Anything or AMA with questions from the community. So I'm going to get through as many as we can in the time we have. And yeah, I've looked at them and there's some really good ones. So
I'm a bit terrified by this. So,
okay, that's it's not too bad. Don't worry. Well, let's dive in. So the first one is actually, a bit of easing you in, and it's from Eva Murray or Try My Data on Twitter, and she asks, "What's the most valuable decision you have made during your Tableau career that has helped you gain the skills that you now have?"
I think blogging, actually. So Andy Cockrave has credited me with being the first ever Tableau blogger. But I did that really I actually still blog for selfish reasons, and I do it so I don't forget things. So when I learned something, I blog about it, and then I can look it up later. Because you're constantly learning in Tableau. Every day, I still learn something new. And that's one of the things I love about Tableau is there's so much that you don't know that you don't know. And that's kind of been my journey the whole way is if I learn something, share it with the community, but write it down for myself, really. People just happen to read it, which is good. And now actually, Lorna Eden and I, we alternate weeks and we record videos every week. It's Tableau Tip Tuesday and I post those up to my YouTube channel. And that's been a great way to sort of share. When I started doing the videos, actually the engagement and the usage of the tips actually increased quite a bit. So I used to just write them step by step, all the screenshots. And I was like, God, this is taking me a lot of time. So I decided let me just do videos. I never edit them. So if I mess up in the videos, I mess up in the videos. And I've had some feedback from people to say, oh, that's pretty cool that you do that. You know? But I think certainly blogging is definitely one of the best decisions I made. That helped me get a bit of exposure, kind of build my brand. I never knew kind of what a brand was, and that wasn't the intent for doing it. But it's really helped people get to know me, and allowed me to share with the community.
No, that's awesome. And I guess if you understand something and can explain it to other people, it makes you sort of break it down in your head, so you better understand it yourself. So. Yeah,
and that's something we make the data schoolers do. So, we don't make them. We encourage them to blog every time they learn something, because if you have to explain it to somebody, especially somebody you're not talking to, then you're going to actually probably learn more than that other person will.
Yeah, No, that's brilliant. And I can definitely agree with the whole blogging kind of thing. I did it many, many years ago, and I've benefited as well. So yeah, great tip there. From a branding perspective and thinking about it. And when I make my own videos, but I do edit mine, but it's probably because I make too many mistakes.
yours are much more professional than mine. So,
thank you.
And I also hear a lot of people say, "Well, there's tons of blogs out there now. You know, how am I going to get lost in the sea?" And that's not why you should blog. You shouldn't blog for other people. Blog for yourself.
Totally. And it's there are other benefits, but do it for you. Yeah, that's a great, very altruistic, but beneficial. Yeah, thing for everyone. I like it. Okay, cool. No, okay. So hopefully we'll see a lot more blogs come out after this podcast goes live.
This is good. That was a nice little softball question to start as well. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks, Eva. Okay, so next up is from Visual Singh. And they ask, if you had to repeat your journey, what would you do differently to accelerate your learning?
Oh, that's a tough question. I don't know if I feel like I really pushed myself a lot already. I've probably used Tableau.
You're no Slack. Yeah.
Yeah. So I started using Tableau on April 11th of 2007, and I've probably used it almost every day since then. If I had to push myself more, was the question just related to Tableau? Okay. So let me think more about. I don't know if I could have pushed myself much more with Tableau. That's a bit of a tough question. But around data visualization, I think I could have. There actually wasn't a lot of content out when I started. So I read Stephen Few's books, which were fundamental in my understanding of kind of best practices. And as more and more books came out, it got harder to keep up with them. I wish I read more. Would probably be the one thing, because I take a lot of what I learn in those books and incorporate it into the teaching that I do at the data school. I try to pass that knowledge on to other people.
Nice. Okay, no, that's a good tip. And there are so many great books out there.
Too many.
Yeah. But I think that's the great thing about data viz. It's now such a field, or has been for a while now. It's so rich, and there's so many great bits of content out there, whether it's books, courses, websites, whatever.
Yeah. And it's a catch 22 because I also need to switch my brain off and get away from this occasionally. So when I do read, I actually tend to not read books about data visualization. So it's, I want to read more, but I also need to make sure I'm not only focusing on that. So I like reading a lot of nonfiction books, books about running and ultramarathons. Mm-hmm. And have you ever heard of the book Pentagon's Brain?
Oh, I have not. No.
Oh, you should read it. It's about DARPA, which is the Defense Advanced Research. Have you heard of DARPA?
Yeah, I've heard of DARPA.
So it's kind of like it's an absolutely fascinating look into the history of DARPA and some of the stuff that they did. It's crazy.
Wow. Okay. No, that's a good point of having a healthy balance, because whether it's data viz or anything else, if you love it, go do it. Push yourself, but I guess you've got to take a breather and be yourself too. So No, I like that. And I guess you definitely push yourself so much, and it's great that you're giving back too, because some people might push and just keep it to themselves, but that's definitely not the case. So it's great that you're passing that on and paying it forward.
I also have a personal blog that I write for my family, I'm very, very slack on that. And I wish, because I do a lot of, we do a lot of traveling. I do a lot of events, like exercise events and stuff, and running and triathlons and stuff. And I wish I wrote about them more, because I want to remember them. My parents would read it. Probably five people would read it, but that's okay. I wish I did more of that, but I don't take my computer home during the week, because I want to make sure I switch off. So if I don't take my computer home, I can't work. If I take my computer home, I'll be on it.
Yep, that's smart. Know yourself, right? And remove those distractions. That's very, I wish I did that. Although I've got my tower here, so I can't really see if it's in my home. So
it's a bit different. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But
I found that I was working too much at home. And, not paying enough attention to my kids or whatever it might be. I was letting myself get easily distracted by being on my computer. And most of the time, it actually wasn't work. It was just using Tableau or finding data sets that I'm interested in. And I just realized I need to switch off.
Okay, no, that's Yeah, very admirable. And I like that. And it's, yeah, a good message. Strike a balance.
Yeah.
Between, yeah. Okay, so next question is from Kim Tricker, who asks, what steps should I take if I'm interested in a career in data visualization?
Yeah, I think that's a good follow-up to the previous question. What steps should I take if I'm interested in a career in data? I jump in. I think you need to make sure you like data visualization first. So I would highly recommend the book 48 Days to the Work You Love. That's a book written by a guy named Dan Miller. It has a lot of religious overtones to it because he's a preacher, but just ignore that part if you're not interested in the religious part. But it's basically the premise behind the book is you could have work that you love to do, but you're not good at it. Or you could have work that you're really good at, but you don't like. So you need to find the combination of those two things. What's something I love to do that I'm also good at? And that's when you won't feel like you're ever working a day in your life. And I'm fortunate enough to have found that. And that was a book I actually read around the same time that I started using Tableau. And it was like, oh, this kind of feels like it was meant to be. So I recommend that book to a lot of people. But as far as getting your career started specifically in data visualization, read as much as you can. I would start with books that focus on not on tools, but on fundamentals. So the first book I read was Information Dashboard Design by Stephen Few. I would encourage you to read that book, plus Show Me the Numbers by Stephen Few. I would absolutely make those the first two books you read. Of course, you should read the Makeover Monday book. I would also read Storytelling with Data by Colin Affleck.
Yeah,
that's a great book and that's tool agnostic, which is great. Stephanie Evergreen has a great book. What are some of the other ones that I would recommend? And then, of course, there's Tableau focused books as well. But I would focus on books that are related to data visualization first.
Yeah, no, I like that. Get the fundamentals done, then use the tools or find the tool which works for you.
That's
very wise. And again, I guess I can ask you this because then it won't be a shameless plug, but like also, do you reckon applying like what you're learning in a kind of community environment, like maybe like Makeover Monday, it helps too?
Absolutely. Yeah, because if you don't apply it, you're not going to really know. I don't think it'll make as much sense. Now, Stephen Few's books are very, very clear. They're written in a very simple language that's easy to understand. But if you don't practically apply it, so for example, what if you're in a lecture about mathematics and you just listen to the lecture, are you really going to learn it? No, that's why they give you homework. And that's why you should do extra work if you're struggling. It should be no different with data visualization. If you want to get good at it, you have to practice.
Yeah, that's totally. I learn much better by doing than just reading, or like a combination.
Most people do. And that's one of the reasons we do Makeover Monday is to give people already clean data sets and let them look at the original visualization, think critically about it based on the stuff that you should have already learned by reading those books, and then think about your visualization, think about your design process, and then create something a bit better. And, hopefully that process helps people develop. And we're seeing tons of people get jobs because of the profiles they're building on Tableau Public through Makeover Monday.
So
we keep a list of that.
That's awesome. So you're saying the employer goes to their Tableau Public profile and just sees how they're getting better and better, or just sees their great work. And they're like, because I think often people say they're good at data viz, but if you can actually show them too with a real living, breathing portfolio.
Well, think about if you're a graphic designer, does anybody ever ask you where you went to school? They really don't care. They want to see what you've done. So why is data visualization any different than that? It shouldn't be. It's just graphic design on a computer with numbers. It's the same thing. And I also encourage people to never delete anything from their portfolios because you want to be able to show that progression of work. Don't keep just your 10 best things on there. Keep everything that you've ever created on there. Like, for example, this week on Makeover Monday, we're actually making over one of my original, one of the very first things I published up the Tableau Public. And it's terrible, but I leave it on there because it shows a progression of my work.
No, that's really humble and inspiring too, because it's kind of like you've got to come from somewhere, and I guess it reminds others. But yeah, you see that progression. So
that's what I'm hoping people get out of that is, yes, I've been doing this a long time, but I was a beginner as well.
Yeah. I think that's one of the interesting things I've found, or one of the reasons I've done the podcast, is a lot of people see these great data visualizers in the community and go, oh, not where I can never get to that stage. But when we just chat, they always say like, look, I started somewhere. I just threw myself in. Yeah. Like they're real, just, they're just normal people who just apply themselves a bit more, and anyone can do that. So it's good to hear you're saying you weren't just born like amazing at data viz.
One of the things I did this week is I recorded actually my whole process of building my visualization for Makeover Monday, but I did it in Tableau 6 because that's the version that we had used, or that I had used, of the original visualization. So that was a really interesting experience. It crashed a few times. I couldn't do the data prep, so I had to pull up Tableau Prep to get the data ready. And I got it all done in just over an hour. But it was a really fun exercise. I hadn't used it in, you know, probably since then.
That's a good point. Cause yeah, Tableau's definitely come a long way since version 6. So it's good you set yourself a challenge.
Yeah. It's completely different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Perfect. Okay. So let's go to the next one. We've got, Sarah Loves Data. Hey, Sarah.
Sarah Bartlett.
She's, I think she's been a guest on a podcast. That's all good. So she's asking, this is a good one. What is your favorite all-time Tableau viz, not by you?
I wouldn't say any of mine are my favorites anyway.
That is
like an impossible. It's like picking your favorite child. I actually try to go onto Tableau Public every once in a while and look through the people that I follow and try to bookmark some of the visualizations. David, can you flip over to my Tableau Public profile page, please?
Sure thing. Here we go.
Yeah, if you flip over to my favorites, you'll see that I have a few things favorited here. I really do, like I mentioned a minute ago, I do a pretty poor job of going through Tableau Public and favoriting things, but it's hard. It's hard to find the time to do it. And there's so many good pieces of work out there.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to say I'm a bit biased by the people at the data school and the information lab because they do produce so much work, and I'm actually just more connected to their work because I see it all the time.
Fair enough.
Quite a few things that are on my profile are from Tableau Public. There's one, if you go down to the second row on the right-hand side, it says, what is the most popular usage of dockless scooters in Austin? Do you see that
yes.
one?
Yes. Yep. Just opening it up
so
now.
Go ahead and open that one. That one's by Hesham Aisha, who just graduated from the data school. And a little bit of backstory about Hesham. So he applied to the data school and he didn't get in.
Oh.
And we had given him a task to go, you know, hey, we think you're close, but you're not quite ready yet. Go off and practice more before you get there. And if you look at his profile, you don't have to flip over to it, but if you look at his, if anybody looks at his profile, he's got 42 viz's out there and they're almost all outstanding. And that showed me that he really, really wanted the job. But if you look at this particular visualization, it's pretty great, right?
Yeah.
It's got the big numbers. It has, everything's very clear. The colors used very sparsely, but also appropriately. And the most interesting about this is he did this as part of, this was his final interview data set for the data school.
Wow.
And to build something like this before he even started here is just incredible. I mean, how do you even do it? I could have never done this in my first 6 months of using Tableau.
This is incredible. You know,
it has great storytelling as you go down. You know, lots of all of the insights are pointed out. It has a great, you know, map using the density maps. And it just does this story top to bottom. And it's just incredible. And how... This is definitely one of my favorites of all time on Tableau Public. It's just, and kind of the backstory to it is what's really amazing to me.
I'm inspired by it. I'm going to have to definitely check this out in more detail afterwards. But yeah, first glance, amazing. And it's made even more incredible by that story you've just told where, you know, he didn't just give up and didn't go, he really applied himself. And this is incredible. Yeah. Wow. Okay, that's great. Yeah, thank you.
If people are interested in sort of the kind of work that I like to look at, just go to my Tableau Public profile. Really, anything by Adam McCann is going to be fantastic. You know, it's the work that he produces is just incredible. Actually, and I also have bookmarked. So people have been creating things like there's one that's called like options for KPIs and, you know, a workbook full of parameter actions that people have done and how to do legends and bar charts and, you know, kind of template things. And I like favoriting those because they give me ideas when I'm stuck. So I would encourage people to look at those types of workbooks as well.
Amazing. I have to confess, I keep forgetting about the favorites functionality in Tableau Public.
Yeah. And
this is,
you're not the only one.
Yeah. But it makes sense. Like if you're using it, I'm totally going to follow that. That's amazing. Yeah. These are great. Yeah. So thank you for answering that. It's tough. I understand. But then, yeah, the one you just picked out is amazing. So Thank you. Okay, we got Lorna Eden now asking, what is your So what is your favorite calculation in Tableau?
Am I allowed to swear?
We'll give it a go. Worst case is I can beep it out.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I actually had dinner with her last night. And I would probably say my favorite calculation is if Lorna, then shit list end, because she's the only one on my shit list. But it's just a joke between us. But so if you have to bleep that out, that's perfectly fine. But but as far as Tableau calculations, table calculations, definitely my favorite. I like when I was participating more in Workout Wednesday and posting challenges. Of course, LODs existed, but I would force people to use table calculations. I would say you're only allowed to use table calculations because I want people to get a better understanding of what Tableau is doing behind the scenes and how table calculations work because they're incredibly powerful. And I think people use LODs as a crutch because they're easier. What they don't realize is you can have performance impacts with level of detail expressions because they're separate queries that are sent to the data source, where with the level of detail expression, it works with the data that's already in your view. So it's all cached. So they work much quicker. And you also learn how to manipulate fields and, you know, how do you kind of trick Tableau to display things a certain way. And it took me a really, really long time to understand table calculations. They didn't start making sense until Tableau changed the little configuration window that comes up. I then wrote a blog post because I finally understood it. So I wanted to write it down. So I created a few PowerPoint slides and then used them as images for, you know, how do I understand what table calculations do? What does it mean when a box is unchecked versus checked? And how do you, so I wrote a blog post that's, the title, something like, table calculations in a plain English sentence. So how can you translate that into, so if you think about a question you need to answer, if you could put it into that format, then you automatically know how to set up your table calculation.
I like that. That's smart. Yeah. Again, it's, you could definitely, it becomes easier to remember the syntaxes and just.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like super helpful. I mean, that's how I teach them. But it took me 10 years to understand table calculations, 10 years, something like that. I understood what they did, but I really struggled with how to configure them properly. And then one day it just clicked.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to
have to I'm trying to accelerate that learning for people now.
No, that's perfect. And did you say that's a post you've done recently or?
It is. It would have been probably 2 years ago, something like that.
Okay. I'll go find it and pop it in. But that's cool. No, just on the swearing, shit's fine. I thought you were going to say something like, yeah, but okay. Great.
Laura will like that as well. She'll expect an answer like that.
Okay. So we got a question from Frederick Najjar, who asks, what steps do you take when you approach a new data set?
Oh, that's great. That's a great question. I wrote a blog post about this. Sorry, I keep referring to blog posts, but I wrote a blog post on the Data School website, and I'll try to pop it over to you in the chat so you can bring it up. So I wrote this blog post on the Data School blog, but it came up because I was asked a question by the data schoolers. How do I approach designing a dashboard? Very, very simple question, but you know, the session that I was teaching was initially it was about how do I use containers and how do I lay out the dashboard? But I thought, you know what? Before you can do that, you need to understand the data. So I've written this blog post and I guess people can find it in the show notes here, but I basically start with questions. I create, you know, I connect to the data set. And the first thing I do is I create five tabs. And I create questions on each of those. When, where, what, who, and why. And I try to answer each of those questions with the data set. And that helps me get familiar with the elements that are in the dashboard or that are in the data set. So for example, when you're asking a when question, there's so many different ways that you can visualize time series data. So I might start with just a simple line chart. And then I might copy that or duplicate that sheet and answer that question a different way. Or maybe I build a heat map or, you know, I do some kind of small multiples, whatever it might be, put different dimensions on color and size and whatever it might be. And so I answer that question with when. And then when I get to where, I'm thinking more about geographic information. So if there are geographic fields, I'll look at them and see what they have in them. Sometimes there isn't geographic data, but you might also, so where might mean, so for example, it could be, you know, you just have a region, for example, and you want to know what are, you know, there, somebody's asking you about, you know, they want to be able to compare their stores within certain regions. Well, regional data is still where, it's just not on a map. So I think when people consider the question where, they only think about maps, but there's lots of other questions you can answer about where. It could be even, you know, a segment of a store. So this department versus this department, and where are they located within the shop? And how is that affecting sales? Things like that. So I did a lot of that when I worked at Coca-Cola. You would look at, okay, what's the sales at something that's the front of the store versus the back of the store versus on an end cap versus just regularly in the aisle. And in the aisle, what shelf is it on? Is it on the first, second, third, fourth? You know, is it eye level? All that stuff, that's still where information. Yeah. It's just not on a map.
No, I like this. Yeah, that's... You don't want to limit yourself. It's not just geography, it's location relative
exactly
in space.
And then, you know, the what, the who, the why. I just build lots of different charts that try to answer that question. Some of them you can't because the data is not there. Now, of course, why is the toughest one, but hopefully as you've gone through the first four, you start to get an idea of the why. So if you see a big spike in sales, you should be asking yourself, why is that? Dig into that particular part of the data. Is it real? You know, if it's such an outlier, is there a typo somewhere? You know, that sort of thing. So you can look at the distribution of the data for that point, and that might help you answer the why.
No, that's really smart. And that's kind of a good framework because I guess data can be anything, really. Like it can go in different directions, be of different topics, different formats. But I guess if you have those like five or that kind of structure, it allows you to at least critically think about it, who your audience is. That kind of stuff. Like this is smart stuff and it's applicable to anything.
Yeah. Down just a couple of paragraphs from that, I list out, you know, the typical charts that I'll create for each of those questions. So going back to the why, I might do scatter plots or heat maps. I'll do scatter plots if I'm looking at measures. I'll do heat maps if I'm trying to compare dimensions. And then the blog post goes down and talks about, okay, well, which of those are my favorites? And what I do is I color code the tabs that are in Tableau. I don't know if people know you can even do that. And I color code the ones that I think I might want to use in my dashboard. And then I go to that like slide sorter type view. I don't even know what that view is called. And I move them around so that their first position, this is what I think is going to be on the upper left. I want this one, but it's probably the least important one. So I'll put it, you know, so I kind of take all the ones that I've color coded and I put them at the beginning of that slide sorter. And it just helps my thought process because then I know I can ignore everything else.
No, that's perfect. And I think I learned that color coding tip from you because I think it also lets you, it color codes when you're trying to do filters across different worksheets. Is that correct?
That's right.
So you kind of go, oh, I'll just tick all the red ones. So, but no, that's a great process.
Exactly. Like,
I like that. Like fire them all out, see what works, rearrange them.
That's
a great tip.
And then I go into the kind of the dashboard design process from there.
Yeah.
I know that's kind of a lengthy answer to the question, but hopefully, and then I also recorded a webinar as well. And David, I'll send you the link afterwards, but I recorded a webinar for XSL that was, it was called Turning Big Data into Insights. And the idea there was, what is my step-by-step approach to analyzing a data set I haven't seen before? So the data set that I used was UK prescriptions or prescriptions in the United Kingdom. It was about 724 million records. Well, that's a lot of data. You can't look at all of it. So how do you kind of whittle down to find important information? So it goes along with that as well.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, yeah, this is great. Yeah, I'll definitely put it in. I think by the end of this podcast, we're going to have a list as tall as me. But that's awesome because it's all great content.
Yeah, yeah. And I've sent you that in the chat as well, so you can just grab it later if you want.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Brilliant. I don't have to go researching. I like that. This is cool. Cool. Okay. Okay, we're making good time. Definitely got time for some more questions.
I can go as long as you want. So okay. It's up to you.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Okay, so next one is from Paulie. What viz are you most proud of making and why?
That's a very easy question. So the one I'm most proud of is the visual vocabulary that I built that was based on almost like a chart chooser that the Financial Times has. And I was just curious if I could build them all in Tableau. So I started out on an exercise to do that. And it took me a few weeks to get it done. Some of them were easier than others. Some of them took some data prep or finding blog posts where people had already done that I could follow step by step. And I kind of turned it into this interactive dashboard where you can go through it the same way that the Financial Times has their layout. What was really interesting with that is I got contacted by somebody over at the Financial Times. They had no idea I was working on this. And they had asked me to come over and give a talk over at their office to their data visualization team. Yeah, complete coincidence. Cool. Wow. And it was the day before I was going to release it. And I showed it to them and they were like, and I was like, oh, I hope they're not, you know, upset that I'm kind of using their work. And, you know, and I had asked them permission before, you know, do you mind if I build some charts based on your, what you've created? And they said, no, they didn't mind. So I actually showed it to them in the session I had with them, and I got so many questions about it, and they just thought it was really cool. So that made me feel good as well. I was like, "Ooh, that's a big sense of relief." But that was a labor of love. It might not be my favorite from a design perspective, but it's certainly my favorite from the effort and the impact that it's had.
Yeah, this is incredible. I've got it up on screen whilst I've been talking, and it's so cool. I haven't looked at it for ages, but I need to maybe just bookmark this because it's so inspirational.
And there's a mobile version as well. I built a mobile version too. So if you look at it on your phone, it's just long instead.
Amazing. Cool, man. Oh, that's going to go down too. This is great. Cause I guess it's interactive too. It's not like, you know, people can kind of quickly figure out what they want. Like, oh, I want changes over time. What are some best practices? And then bam.
Yeah. We have them printed out on canvases here at the data school. So we have a wall near the classrooms that has them just kind of lined up across the wall. And it's really interesting to see data schoolers walk out there and look at it and say, okay, this is my data. What are the types of charts that I could, you know, what are some of the charts that I could build? It's, of course, it's not an exhaustive list, but, and it gives them ideas, and our customers like seeing it and stuff. So.
Yeah, it's very inspirational, and it just looks good too. I think it's like hitting that sweet spot. It's like helpful, and it's useful. But looking at the view count, the view count, it's definitely helping a lot of people. So that's brilliant.
Well, good,
nice one. Okay, cool. That was a good one. I'm going to try and pronounce this right. So Simone Magagnini. Sorry if I've got that wrong. I did my best.
Nini has some specific stuff. I don't think you can't be too far off.
Yeah, it's close. But I have a habit of butchering names, so it's trying.
So yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
Thank you. Cool. Okay, so she's asking, what would be your minimum extra skill to learn to make better use of any BI tool, especially Tableau, but any BI tool would do?
I would definitely say SQL. I teach SQL at the data school as well, and I've used it for a long time. And I find it a great way to explain and understand what Tableau is actually doing when it's bringing the data back into the view. So what kind of query is it running? And of course, you can see that in the logs, in the Tableau logs. But if you learn how to write SQL, I think it'll help you understand what Tableau is actually doing, especially when it comes to things like table calculations and level of detail expressions. If you learn how to write those in SQL, it'll probably make a lot of sense because they work inside out. So a table calculation first has to bring back the data. So that's a SQL query. And then once you have those results, you wrap another SQL query outside of that. And that's how you do a table calculation, or that's how you do a level of detail expression. And to me, it helps me. So if you have a nested level of detail expression or a nested table calculation, they work inside out. They don't work outside in. So it has to run the inner one first, and then it runs the outer one on top of that result set.
No, that's a great skill. And I guess, it gets you thinking about what Tableau does, just so it's not like some magic, because they say like any technology which you can't comprehend is like similar, just the same as magic. I think a lot of people think that, but equally, yeah, like I guess SQL is also great just because it allows you to get data. I know so many analysts who are good, but they're just used to getting like Excel files or CSVs spat out from some kind of CRM tool. And it's just like, okay, that's great. But what happens if you need something a bit different, which you can't get from that like WYSIWYG UI? And I think SQL just gives you that, I guess, gives you more keys to kind of unlock doors, get data, and just get it in the right format. Yeah.
It's also something you can use to verify data. So is the data you're seeing in the data you're receiving, is it actually the correct data? Are the aggregations working correctly? So the more you know about how databases work and how you can query databases, I think it'll make you a better data analyst as well.
Yeah, totally. It's okay. That's a great skill. And I think that can apply to any BI tool, Tableau as well. But like
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's easy to learn too, which is the best part, because there's the structure is the same with every single query. So as long as you know the order of operations for a SQL query, you just fill in the blanks and that's it.
Yeah, totally. And actually, I'll put a link down below because I remember trying to find a good way of explaining SQL to people. And it's actually a website called sqlishard.com. But what it does is it teaches you the fundamentals, but then it gets you to apply them as soon as you've learned them. So it's similar to what we were talking about earlier. So
exactly, you're talking about
joins, inner left joins, like a bit of a regex. And you actually learn and go, oh, no, okay, now I've got to do this. And it gives you like a use case, and it'll tell you if you're right or wrong, and it'll give you the right answer if you get stuck. Mm-hmm. And very good stuff. So it's not hard once you go to that site or ask people to help you.
When I teach SQL, I have them also recreated in Alteryx and recreated in Tableau. So how do the different tools work to get to that answer? And I find that when they all understand Alteryx very, very well, and then they're like, oh, okay. So when I do a group by, that's the same thing as my summarize tool in Alteryx. Okay, I get it. So when you're building those workflows step by step, it's really just running SQL queries along the way.
Yeah, no, that's great. You've got to, I guess a good chef has to understand all the steps and ingredients it takes to make a good dish. So same with data. I like that. Okay, so we actually got another one from Sarah Loves Data. She came up with some really good ones. And this is interesting. So hypothetically, if Tableau disappeared tomorrow, what would be your go-to visualization tool of choice?
Yeah, so it's something I've actually always wanted to learn and dabbled in it a bit, but D3 would probably be. I love the customization in it and the interactivity that it provides. The part I've struggled with is I don't really understand how structured data within D3. And I haven't spent enough time learning it. It's something I've wanted to learn for a long time and just haven't put the time in to do it, but I should. But D3 would definitely be my visualization tool of choice. Of course, with D3, you have to know the answer before you build your visualization. And that's the same with most BI tools, is you need to know the answer before you can build the chart. So another option might be R. You can interrogate data relatively easily in R. I would use Alteryx a lot more to interrogate the data. The beauty of Tableau is it makes that interrogation process very, very simple. So at its heart, Tableau is a data analysis tool. It just happens to do dashboards. It didn't used to do dashboards, which when I first started using Tableau, there was no such thing as dashboards. So it was, and that's why it was built. It was built to interrogate data. And that's why I think that's where the superpower of Tableau is. But it's unfortunately used basically to build dashboards most of the time in corporate environments. Not enough people use it to actually ask and answer questions.
Oh yeah, no, it's one of those things I try and tell people, like, because I benefited from that. If you're in a meeting And, you know, like typically any company, people are just used to like, you know, a boss asking a question and the answer is normally, I'll get back to you in a few days. Here you do it in front of them live and they just, you just blow their mind and they're like,
exactly.
Wait.
Yeah.
And it's so good. You can drill in too. So it's like, oh, wait, but what about this? And then does that affect that? And then if you can empower them to ask the right questions, you can give them the answers and get to the real heart of the problem.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I used to do when I was at Coca-Cola. I would go with the sales teams would ask me to go on customer calls with them. And we would just, you know, we would have a presentation or whatever, but it was all done in Tableau. And the customer would have a question and I would just answer it on the fly. And then they'd have another question. And, you know, like you said previously, they might ask you a question. You'll say, okay, well, when can I get back on your calendar again? They're like, oh, well, 2 weeks or 3 weeks, whatever it is. By that time, the question's either not relevant or they forgot why they asked it in the first place.
Yeah.
And the most fun thing was they say, well, can I have this? And of course, I can't because it has competitor data in it and stuff like that. So, but those were, I loved going on those kind of sales calls where I just got to show people how quickly we can answer their questions and be a partner in their business.
Yeah, that's amazing. And and I think that's the weird thing. It's no secret. It's not hard. It's just a lot of people are just set in the ways of typically how to do it. And it's just, but once they see it, they're like, oh, okay. Yep. We've got to have this all the time now.
And
it's just, hard to prove, but, that's good to hear. I'm not alone with that. And that's cool.
Yeah.
brilliant. But hopefully Tableau doesn't disappear tomorrow. That'd be a sad world. But it's a good tool. So so we have Romeo AI asking, how do you keep up with the latest trends and changes in the field of data visualization?
Yes. Yeah, so from a Tableau perspective, I always get on the beta program. So that I'm familiar with the features because I need to be able to teach them as soon as they come out. So I have to kind of be ahead of the game from a Tableau perspective. I read a lot. So I have, I use Feedly, which is kind of old school, you know, RSS feed sort of thing. But I forget what the Google one was called before that. Google Reader.
Was
brilliant. That. And then they killed it. I was like, no, don't go away. So I use Feedly now and you can do subscriptions and alerts and things like that. It's much, much harder to keep up with stuff now than it used to be though. So I try to follow certain people because I know they're going to probably, it's more their job to be on top of that sort of stuff. And I'll look at what they're posting. People like Alberto Cairo and Andy Kirk, that's their job is to be on top of that stuff. So I follow them and read the things that they're posting. It's very, very difficult to do. If there's a new book that comes out that I think might be a bit different than what I've read before, I might buy the book and read it. I always buy hard copies of books because I want to be able to mark them up. It's a very difficult thing to do. And data visualization doesn't change that fast either. Now the tools change quite quickly, but I would say the fundamentals of data visualization don't change that quickly. So when you're talking trends and things like that, I would say it's more from a tool perspective. So I also dabble in Power BI every once in a while. I use it for Makeover Monday or, you know, when we have, we might have certain days where I make the data schoolers use it instead of using Tableau. And it's really interesting to see they've never used this tool until the morning and they have to produce something by the afternoon. So it's a really fun exercise to learn. So I think if you're going to try to keep up with one tool that's a competitor of Tableau, I would keep up with Power BI and see what that's doing. It has a lot of great features, but again, it's a dashboarding tool. It's not a data analysis tool.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. It's definitely on my list, Power BI, but it's just I haven't really had a need to use it yet. But it does look good, but it's always tricky, but it's good that you force yourself. Cause again, if I have the choice and I'm under time pressure, I'll just go use what I'm used to. And that's Tableau.
Right.
Like it's
people use Excel, right? Cause they're used to it.
Yeah. But I guess, like if I hadn't made that pivot to use Tableau, I'd have been stuck in the old ways. So I guess I should think about trying other tools. And worst case is what, like you appreciate Tableau more or you go, oh, actually I can do this thing, which Tableau can't in Power BI. And it's, I guess it's win-win, I guess.
You have to find what's right for you and what's going to help help you get your job done successfully, and hopefully you enjoy it at the same time.
Okay. Oh, we got another one from Eva. Try my data. And this is often something which people don't think about, right? At least don't too much until I started doing it in the data viz world. Here's the question. What is your approach to networking, and has it changed over the course of your career?
I hate networking. I hate LinkedIn. I get requests on there all the time. I don't know how people use LinkedIn. It's just lots of noise to me. I think it's something you have to do, though. I think it's changed. My career has changed a bit, though. So I used to have to do more networking because of the roles I was in. Now I don't really feel like I have to as much. I don't have to force myself to do it. Most of the networking I do is just face to face. So I'll go to user groups or, the conference, things like that. And sometimes just a data viz meetup or even a running group. It doesn't have to be data visualization related. You can still do networking and, you might find somebody, are you familiar with Chick-fil-A? The restaurant. So they did a pop-up shop here one time in London and it was just one day only. And we happened to get tickets to it. And we sat down with somebody and we had a mutual interest and we knew somebody, both of us knew one person. And it was like, wow, this would have never happened. But that's the kind of networking I prefer. It's just, sitting and meeting people or, Londoners typically don't like talking to strangers, but so I force them to do it, which is fun because it makes them feel awkward. So most of my networking is done face to face. I don't really do a lot of online networking.
Okay, no, that makes sense. And I guess given your profile or like the size of your profile in the online community, it's probably you don't kind of need to. I guess everyone just comes to you now, so it's
I wouldn't necessarily say that, but at the conference, people come up and introduce themselves to me, which is great. I like meeting people. And when people come say hello and they say thank you, it really means a lot. It encourages me to keep doing it. So, but I don't go to like business events and I don't go to networking events. I really don't like networking. It's definitely not a strength of mine.
Yeah, it's tricky. I kind of understand, like, because it's a lot of time it's not genuine. Like, if it's the personal networking, then that's cool. Like, it's hey, like we've got something common. That's great. But when it's business, it's more like, hi, what value are you to me? I like that. Just shows you're very genuine, which is good. I'm not a big fan of networking either, unless. Yeah, we have a passion. But that's the good thing about the Tableau conference. Most people you turn to and go, hey, do you like data viz? And they're like, wow. So it's like, so it's always a good icebreaker. It's great. Cool. So okay, next question. So we got Frederick Najjar again. So there's a few repeating in here, but they're all great questions, so I didn't want to get rid of them. What skills are required for a successful data analyst?
Number one is curiosity. You don't have to be an expert in design. You're not going to be a good data analyst unless you're curious and you ask a lot of questions. That's it. That's the number one thing you have to have.
No, I like that. It's think outside the box, just probe. And I think that's why I like Tableau, because you can ask as many dumb questions as you want. Like you ask 10 dumb questions, you get one great answer, 9 are terrible, but you've only spent 5 minutes making that. Like it's so
exactly.
quick.
Exactly, yeah.
Whereas, trying to do that in Excel, you'd be like, oh, I'm not even going to bother. Like, because it's like certain tools inhibit your curiosity, which isn't great. So, but Tableau, I guess, encourages it. Cool. Okay. Curiosity. I like that. Unless you're a cat, don't get curious.
I don't like cats though. So
fair enough. It's I would like them more, but I get allergies. So it's we got a weird relationship.
They're generally angry as well. So
what I want stuff. It's like, hey, I'm just gonna sit on your lap because I want petting, and you're like, would you come on my lap if you didn't want petting? Nope. So it's great. Okay, so next question is from Data Transviz. And they're asking, how do you get the right questions quickly without knowing who your audience is for a data set?
I think that goes back to the question that we answered before about what is the kind of step-by-step approach to a new data set. I would approach it the same way as that last one. You have to, if you don't know your audience, you have to first understand the data. And if you don't have any audience, then you have to make sure you find kind of that happy medium between too complex and too simple. So hopefully, as you're going through and asking those questions, you can sort of figure that out. It's a really tough question to answer. But yeah. Ultimately, if you don't know who your audience is, you got to go find out.
Yeah, I think that's why I kept it in there, because it is, because I was just thinking, like, if you don't know who your audience is, why are you kind of making it, unless you are your audience? But it's just
for your personal learning, right.
Yeah, but it's kind of like if you don't know the audience, you can't figure out the message or what's going to be useful. So
yeah, okay. Yeah, if you don't know the audience, you don't know what questions they want answered. And when I am speaking to a stakeholder, I don't let them tell me what they want to see. I let them tell me what questions I ask them. What questions they want answered. It's just flipping it, or it's a slight different in the way that you phrase it. But if you just say, what questions are you trying to answer? And then they have an expectation when you bring it back to them that these are the questions you focused on, not just some random thing. I never let people tell me how to design things.
Yeah.
If they start to try to, I'll say, you know what, this is my area of expertise. Just tell me the sort of questions that you're trying to answer with this data. So basically, why does the project exist?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, because it must be trying to answer something, not just, I want this specific thing. Otherwise, they could build it themselves if they knew. Yeah. But it's interesting. I think I brought this up on previous podcasts. It's kind of like the Henry Ford famous quote of, like, back in the 1900s, if they asked people what they wanted for transport, they'd just say faster horses. But I guess the real question is, I want to get from A to B quicker. So then he kind of created the car or the automobile.
Right.
So it's, yeah.
Right.
So it's, no, I like that. It's a good answer. So yeah, I was curious to see how you'd answer that one. Okay. Answer a question. Okay. This is a good one. Data transfers again. Again, great questions. Thank you. So he's asking, any tips for time boxing on your vis creation process? Because you mentioned in a previous answer, like, you gave yourself about an hour to do some analysis. Yeah. So, like, are there any tips? Because I've gone down like 5-hour black holes of data analysis without realizing. Yeah. So yeah, what tips do you have to help?
Well, first off, every project's different. So you can't, I would encourage you to kind of budget your time first off. So start with an hour, see how many questions you can answer with an hour. So if you follow that approach of asking those five questions, that's going to ultimately kind of time box you, because you can only, answer those questions so many different ways. So if you focus on those, you'll probably have and if you're using something like Tableau, you'll probably have your answers in 30 to 45 minutes. Just build lots and lots of things. You're going to toss 90% of them, 95% of them. But, you know, just keep exploring the data. For Makeover Monday, I time box myself. I try to stay under an hour, just because it's part of my process. I force myself to do it because I don't want to overthink it as well. If you don't time box yourself, you're going to fiddle around with it forever. And there's no such thing as a completed data visualization. They're never done. You could continually work on them if you wanted to. So you have to just say, you know what, this is my deadline. When I get to this point, I'm going to be done.
No, I like that. It's kind of an often used quote in, like, yeah, when building products, it's like, done is better than perfect. It's like, because, like, you can keep polishing it, but if no one's going to use it, because you're like, no, I'm still finishing it.
And right. It's minimal gains at that point.
Yeah. I guess there's probably some graph where it's like, yeah, diminishing returns to the point of nothing. And yeah, that's a good point. I've got to keep putting that into my head. It's cool. this is great. Okay. So, look, we've had lots of great questions. I'm going to just end on this one because we're nearly out of time. Matthew Spurdle asks, what is your favorite Oreo flavor? And fun fact, I didn't actually know Oreos had other flavors until just now.
Yeah, so that's a good question. I don't know why he would ask that question. I'm not quite sure what he knows about me, but I eat a lot of Oreos. So here in the UK, you can buy them in like a log, you know, where there's like 12 or 13 of them in a pack. And I only ever buy double stuff, because I think if you're buying the single stuff, you're kind of cheating yourself. It depends if you like the cookie part or if you like the cream part of it. But I really like the cream part. So I eat a whole roll of those every day at lunch. It's kind of gross, but I'm like totally addicted to them. But the way that I eat them is I take the top off of one, mm-hmm. and then eat the cookie, the top part, okay. and then I break the cookie in half so I get like a quadruple stuff, and then eat that part. So and then last week, but just the regular Oreos, the chocolate top, the white cream middle. I don't like any of the other flavors. But last week, one of our guys was coming back from the U.S. and he brought back Mega Stuff Oreos from the U.S.
Oh, what are those?
I think it's like a triple stuff.
Oh, triple.
Wow. So I was making different kind of sandwiches with them. So I would take the tops off of two of them and make it like a six stuff. and then I made it like a club sandwich where you have a whole cookie and then just the cream and the cookie from the top one, you know, like, so it's three cookies and two things of cream. I felt pretty ill after eating those though.
Yeah, that's I'm sure you had no regrets, but, Hayla, I think maybe we've cracked the mystery of why you run ultra marathons is to burn off all the calories.
I don't run ultra marathons, but I run marathons, and I'm actually running, I'm doing my first, Ironman distance event next July. So, not quite sure I'm going to find the time to train for it, but I'm going to give it a go.
Cranky. So is that just to burn off all the calories from eating all these Oreos? Yeah.
it could be. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's cool, man. So, I love playing with that kind of those food. Like we have jammy Dodgers in England. I'm not sure what you have, the cream and the jam. I guess it's like a weak imitation of Oreos, but like when I was a kid, I used to like, peel a bit off, put it on top and try to make a mega one. But that's
awesome. I like gelato better than Oreos though. So when my family was in Rome, was it last summer? I think it might've been, I tracked all of the gelato I ate. And I had 40 scoops of gelato in 5 days. So, it was quite impressive, I must say. So I had to have, I knew I was approaching 40 and I had to finish on a nice round number. So the last day I had 4 scoops for breakfast and then I had to have like 10 for the day. And then we had like 3 at lunch and then 3 before we went to the airport.
That's impressive. I can only imagine the sugar crash after
And I marked all the places on Google Maps and everything. So I have their geolocations and rated them all and the flavors I ate and stuff. So,
oh, wow. Yeah. Is there like a database around that, or is that just for your personal?
I gave it to Pooja Gandhi and Adam Crahan. They do that duo dare or dare duo, and they never did anything with it. So I'm going to have to nag them about that again.
I would love to see that data because I'm a big gelato fan too. So I'll have to get some tips.
Yeah.
Okay. Brilliant. Okay. So, that's it for now. We've had so many great questions and also so many great answers from Andy. So, thanks for being on the show. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate asking. This was a really fun format. I'm glad we thought of it. It was something a bit different.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's pushing me. I need to spice up the questions, I think, for the next few podcasts. So these are all great. So thank you for that. Cool. So all the links will be below. And if you haven't heard of Andy, go follow him. You'll get so much out of like your just data viz game and how you think like about approaching data visualization problems. And he's just a nice guy too. So it's always good to have better people in your life like that. So,
very nice of you.
Cool. No, thank you. Okay. So that's it for this episode. And thank you for listening. Okay. And look, if you're new to the podcast, consider subscribing to stay up to date on all the latest episodes. And also visit datasaurus-rex.com/welcome to see all the other data visualization content we have to help you out. Until the next time, thank you for watching. And thank you, Andy.
Thank you.